From the great Atlantic Ocean to wide Pacific shore, to the queen of the flowing mountain, south of Baltimore. She's mighty tall and handsome, yet known quite well by all. She made a modern combination on that Wabash cannonball. She come down to Birmingham on a cold December day. When she rolled into the shed, you could hear all the people say, yeah, the gal from Tennessee, she's long and she's tall. She's here from Indiana on that Wabash cannonball. Can't you hear the jingle roll, the rumble and the roar, gliding through the woodland, through the hills and by the shore? The mighty rushing of the engine, lonesome hobo squall, traveling through the jungle on that Wabash cannonball. Yes, old Daddy Claxton may his name forever stand. He'd long to be remembered, call is known out through the land. But his earthly race is over, the curtain around him falls, taking him through to Dixie on that Wabash cannonball. Can't you hear the jingle roll, rumble and the roar, gliding through the woodland, through the hills and by the shore? Mighty rushing on the engine, lonesome hobo squall, traveling through the jungles, boys, on the Wabash cannonball.
Yeah. It's Brian and Vinny's show, everybody. It is, what is today, Tuesday? Wednesday?
It's definitely Tuesday.
It's November 17th, 2007, 2010.
All your,
why do I even try?
Even more off than Matt Strike or Michael Cole.
Oh, see, there you go.
God damn.
We got a new studio here, everybody.
We do.
Vinny, for those of you that remember the days when Vinny sat on a stool and he had one of those little rolling computer deals, those rolling computer desks that his deal was on, and he was as uncomfortable as a human could possibly be, those days are over. Vinny now has his own desk. He has his own comfy leather chair. A used chair, I might add. But
dude, I'm not complaining.
It's a chair nonetheless.
This is an improvement.
And we got some booms for our mics, some floating booms. So we no longer... Vince used to have a microphone stand like he was doing a Def Leppard concert. And now he's got an actual...
It's on an arm.
It's like you're...
I can move it up and down and left and right.
And you could touch it so that it makes a lot of noise.
I can see. Which I touched the bottom of it, but anyway... And that's not like I'm touching that part, but...
How about you stop doing that?
I will stop doing that now. The point being, I can move it so I can position it so it's in front of me, but I can look over it and see my computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I had to position the mic in front of me and look with my eyes all the way over to the right where my computer screen was.
Which, of course, caused a lot of problems with you not talking into the mic.
If you say so. I don't listen to shows, so I wouldn't know.
Well, put one of these pictures up on my Facebook. Everyone can see the new setup. It's quite the sweet setup here. It's like a real, legit radio studio now.
There's a plant in here? Actually, a couple of plants.
There's a new tree over there in the corner. I've changed things around. I want it to be a comfortable environment so that perhaps we could have more guests in studio in the future. We had Lance in studio, and he sat on the stool and talked into the Def Leppard mic. And as you'll recall, we have not had a guest in studio since. So he may have put out a bad word. Now,
I'm sure that's it.
Now that has all changed. Now, obviously, with all of this wonderful equipment, we have to produce a good show, and that's a different matter entirely.
I shall do my best.
I will note that as I was testing out the floating mic earlier today, I heard popping. I swear to God.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
And I want to say that... I've been online. If I counted up the number of hours I've been online trying to figure out this fucking problem, I really think that it's...
You would have a lot of hours.
If I got paid $10 an hour for all the hours that I paid looking for information on this, I'd probably be a millionaire right now. But I would like to alert everybody that I found a page here online that is dedicated to this problem. And at last count, we were at... on this particular forum here, 51 pages. This is not a problem that only I am having. And as I'm going through the 51 pages, reading about other people that have this same problem and are trying to find a solution, the conclusion that I have come to, and that everyone has come to here, is there are about a million different solutions that people have come up with. Some of them work for people forever. Some of them don't work for people. And some of them work for people for short periods of time. And I think that I fall into the latter group, where whenever I find a solution, everything works great for a couple of days, and then it all goes to hell again. And so the conclusion that several people in this thread have drawn, there are two conclusions. Number one is, the one thing that everyone in these 51 pages has in common is Windows 7.
Mm.
So, to make a long story short, if you are planning on spending literally thousands and thousands of dollars to create a studio to do what we are doing here on this show, don't fucking get Windows 7 on your new computer. Use Vista. I never thought I would recommend Vista, but this worked fine on Vista. And apparently, Windows 7 and audio have a lot of different issues. That's the first conclusion. The second conclusion is, people seem to believe that if you just restart your computer every day, it will be fine. So that's what I'm going to be doing. I never restarted my computer every day. And the theory is that when you restart your computer, everything is fine. And then, I guess, processes build up and shit builds up. I don't know the technical term for this jargon, the technical jargon for this deal. But eventually, it gets to the point where the popping returns. So you restart your computer and you get a fresh slate. That seems to be the conclusion here. So basically, I'm going to restart the computer every day. I'm going to continue doing all of these little tips that people have suggested, and if the popping continues, then I'm going to go back to Windows Vista 32-bit and bid Windows 7 64-bit farewell. So that is the update on that. As far as the kittens, they're adorable. They're still small, one of them. One of them is getting fat. I think I've talked about this before. They're two completely different cats at this point. The fatter one, Gracie, is fatter, and even though they're sisters and they were born at the same time, she seems to be older. Like, she has cat fur, and the little one, Snorky, still has kitten fur, where it's kind of a little bit fuzzy. And so the big one is kind of like the older sister, and so she does all sorts of stuff, and the little one does everything that she does. So now that the big one is able to jump up on top of things, the little one is trying to also jump up on top of things. And this has led to a lot of great comedy, such as the big one not being able to jump very well because she is still technically a kitten at 3.5 months old. So she tries to jump on something, and then there's violent scratching in the air as she attempts to save herself, and then she flops down onto the ground again. The little one was sitting on top of its little scratching post the other day and randomly just fell off and splatted on the floor. We had a chase scene where they ran behind this picture that we have not hung yet, and they used to both fit behind it, but today the little one ran behind it and the big one tried to run behind it and just got stuck. So we've had a lot of fun little things with the cats. They're still cute. They're still rather adorable. They're sometimes annoying, but so far, so good. So thanks, everybody, for all of the cat tips. There have been a lot of them. I put a new picture up on the Facebook today of the fat one sleeping flat on its back with its arms straight up over its head and one eye open, staring in a freaky manner at the camera. And the cat was actually asleep when it was doing this. So that one's up on my Facebook right now. And I have promised I'll put up the picture of the cat sleeping on Vinny. I'll do that at some point. Thank God I got that picture, because the cats have not slept since you've returned, Vince, in weeks now. So yeah, that's the update. They were a little bit wacky tonight, but overall, I don't know.
They're kittens.
They are kittens.
You act surprised.
Well,
they were running around doing kitten things.
Yeah.
And you were surprised and a little upset, I think.
Well, when we were going to buy the cats, and the lady was talking to us about them, she said, they're nocturnal. And for whatever reason, I'm not a dumb guy, but sometimes my brain does not work right.
You have selective input.
Yeah, when she said they're nocturnal, my brain said, they'll sleep through the night.
Hmm.
That's not what nocturnal means, everybody.
It's the opposite of what nocturnal means.
So I've been trying to train these cats to sleep through the night and be wild during the day. And so far, I'm not having a lot of luck. But I guess we'll see what happens. We'll see if we can turn them into non-nocturnal kittens. That is my goal for these little buggers. The other day, what showed up? I bought something. Oh, I bought one of those, when you have a room with a rug and you want a rolling chair on it, you get one of those mats to go underneath your chair.
You're sitting on it right now.
Yeah. I bought one made of bamboo when I bought this new desk set so I could give Vinny the old desk. I could have gotten a plastic one, but the plastic ones break, like, all the time. So I figured I'd get a wood one. They were on sale. So I grabbed it, and it came in a long, thin, square box.
A long, not quite a tube, but it was...
A square box.
It's a big tunnel.
Yeah. So, my buddy Phil came over, and he created a toy for the buggers, where he took the tube-type deal, and he leaned it up against the stairs, so the cats could run down the stairs, go into the tube, and slide down it to the other side. And they had so fucking much fun doing this and trying to climb up the other way. And then we set it up for the night. We, like, leaned it straight up so they wouldn't plane it and go all crazy. And somehow the fat one jumped into the tube when it was standing straight up and down and fell all the way down to the bottom and was stuck.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. And so we had to save that little bugger. But that was it. We've had no accidents. For those of you that remember the story about the cat attempting to piss everywhere after we changed its kitty litter, we brought the kitty litter back. We have had zero accidents since that point. So we have learned our lesson about the cats and changing things. They do not like change, so everything is great from that perspective. And overall, a successful week with the kitten so far. So that's great news. And while we're on the subject of not talking about wrestling, before we get into what we have to talk about today, why don't you tell everyone, Vinny, about Norm?
Oh, yeah.
I'd forgotten we had not talked about this yet.
A few weeks back, we went to see Norm Macdonald. We saw three comedians, actually. Four, if you count the local DJ who hosts the thing, but I don't like him, so I don't count him. But we had a Craig Gass, who used to work for the... local Seattle radio station. He did his bit. It was funny, especially we talked about the WTO riots. We had Kyle Cease, who I actually went to high school with. I think you did too.
I was out already.
Yeah. But,
I might have been there for the first year.
Well, you were class of 93, right?
I was 93, yeah.
I think he was class of 95, so yeah. You probably didn't cross paths too often. But he was doing stand-up comedy at the open mic nights we had back then, and now he's doing it for a living. And as he said during his act, he has been in movies. In fact, my girlfriend did not know him by name, but as soon as he came out on stage, she said, "Hey, it's that guy."
It's that guy.
Yeah, and she knew the movie he had been in.
So, I was not blown away with that guy. I thought he was the least funny of all the comedians we saw, except for the guy that wasn't a comedian.
Oh, the radio guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure. He had his moments. Both of them...
Acquired taste.
Well, so was Norm, so...
No, he's not. If you don't think Norm is funny... Then you don't have a sense of humor. That's my conclusion.
Norm was funny.
Norm, listen, I went to this comedy show, and as you mentioned, there were like four comics. Norm was the main event, of course. And the other three guys came out, and I laughed here and there at some of their stuff. Craig was doing a lot of giggling, and so he'd look at me, and I'd giggle a little bit, mostly because he was giggling. But there were a couple of things that I laughed at. Norm went out there, and I fucking was almost crying. I laughed so hard the entire time through. I thought he was, like, so unbelievably great. And the thing about Norm is he's a curmudgeonly man.
Yes.
He is a really old man trapped in a 50-something-year-old body. Thing with Norm is, unlike, we're going to talk about championship wrestling for Florida tonight, and there were a lot of men on that show who... were at their peak during this period, and it is now years later, and you know how things go with time. Some of them are dead. Some of them killed themselves. Some of them were relegated to wheelchairs. I mean, there's, you know, when you're a wrestler, you got a shelf life. With Norm is going to get better with age. Because Norm is a curmudgeonly man stuck in a 50-year-old's body. One of these days, he's going to be a curmudgeonly man trapped in an actual curmudgeonly man's body. which is going to make Norm 1,000 times funnier. So I hope he comes by every year. I will go without fail every single time, even if he tells the same fucking jokes.
It was one of those, some comedians, and there was a guy named Billy Connolly who pointed this out in one of his sets. He did his impression of what people were going to tell their friends about his show the next day, which is that they would say they laughed, they had a great time, they had the night of their lives, and people would ask, well, what did he say? And you'd say, I have no fucking clue.
Yeah.
That was Norm.
Well, Norm had a segment he did built around his own father's heart attack.
He did explain repeatedly that your heart can attack you and kill you.
Norm did a better job than you, Vinny.
Of course he did.
Norm.
Duh.
Norm somehow told jokes about his father's heart attack, and people were pissing themselves with laughter. And I don't know really how he does it, except that he's Norm, but I don't know. I don't know. He was just, there's something about Norm. He's great.
I just like that he explained how when you're a comedian, what you're supposed to do is finish with your best joke, and then as everyone's going crazy, you say, that's all I got, good night, and everyone cheers for you. Then he said what he was going to do was tell an awkward joke and then leave. And he did.
It was so awkward, I didn't get the joke at all.
Yes, but the point, well, part of it was a joke that had been told to him by a dying boy.
And I see.
And so he said, this is the joke the dying boy told me. And he told this joke, and no one laughed. And then Norm said he had lost most of his brainstem.
Jesus.
And then he was done. That was the end of his show.
That's the part I missed. Holy fuck. Yeah. Norm's a special guy, everybody. He is one of a kind.
Yes.
So we greatly enjoyed Norm Macdonald. And if he ever comes to your town, if you have anything resembling a sense of humor, you need to go. Otherwise, I don't know what to tell you. You sad life you lead. All right, speaking of sadness.
Wrestling?
I didn't have a segue. I tried to segue, but
to
I enjoyed
sad on this show.
I enjoyed old school Raw, and I enjoyed championship wrestling from Florida. So I guess it's a pick 'em, but let's start with Raw.
All right. Raw was long. It had some fun stuff. It did, in the end, build towards the main event of the pay-per-view. This is a one-match pay-per-view, if ever there was one. Gene Okerlund was there. He interviewed Cowboy Bob. Cowboy Bob said Randy was not there yet. He called on his cell phone. He did not know, perhaps, that Raw was starting early. That made me laugh. So Wade came out, threatened to beat him up. Miz came out. He said he might cash in his Money in the Bank dealy tonight and take Orton's title, and this would thus ruin the Survivor Series main event and trap Cena and Nexus forever. I laughed at this. So Cena challenged him to a match, and Miz accepted, so that was out. Dolph Ziggler wrestled Mark Henry, who came out in his sexual chocolate gear. They were also in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and the crowd chanted chocolate at him. That made me laugh. Dolph cut an inset promo because it was old school Raw. They needed to bring these back. So they had a long match. Henry kicked out of everything, and Dolph finally won with a sleeper.
I think the inset promos are something that they do need to do because
it's
Dolph
so
Ziggler,
easy.
Dolph actually came off as something resembling a star by having this promo.
Yeah, and it's not a
he doesn't have to cut a long promo.
He doesn't have to get a long scripted promo and try to bring life to it. No, he has to say two or three sentences and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps. And it's better than listening to Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler kill time or Michael Cole and Todd Grisham kill time. So the Hart Dynasty were having a boring conversation. They ran into Tony Atlas, who rambled on insanely about Rocky Johnson and chicken. They left. When the show came back, Tony Atlas was still talking. Yoshitatsu was there, and Yoshitatsu finally mimicked committing Harry Carey on himself. I laughed at this. He would rather stab himself in the gut with a sword and disembowel himself than listen to Tony Atlas anymore.
Comedy.
I laughed. We had the big breakup of the Hart Dynasty. These guys are doomed. After these weeks of the hinting that they were, that one of them would not like each other, Harry went to make the tag. Tyson kicked him in the head. Harry got pinned. Tyson smirked. They were still being buried for being boring, both of them. There's no hope for these men.
They may have well done this on Impact.
Really, yeah. Or Superstars or NXT or something. Just no one cared. We had a close-up of Gene Okerlund in HD. This man has an incredible fake tan.
I guess. Jean has always been a weird color.
Well, this kind
of... I remember seeing Jean in the 80s and going, why is this fucking man so dark? And I presumed he had just been hanging and banging with the Hulkster at the beach all the time. But maybe that's just his natural color.
I guess. Everything about him, as much... Everything about him screams fake.
What?
Just, he's Gene Oakland. He's the ultimate shill. That's what his job is.
That's very real.
All right. So, he was interviewing Randy. He'd finally shown up. Truth interrupted. Said that Cena had countered the pin on Randy last week, even though... Well, I guess it wasn't fair and square. He missed Miz interfering. Although Miz was his partner, so what the hell. But anyway, he said Randy could get screwed on Sunday, or he could do something about it tonight. Those are his only options, because Cena was bound to screw him on Sunday. So Randy said that if he punted Cena in the head tonight, then Cena couldn't screw him later. We then had Gene Okerlund hosting Update.
Mm-hmm.
I was very excited, and the update was just, you can go to the website and buy shirts.
I couldn't believe they didn't have him do WWE Update plugging Survivor Series.
You would think.
With the old Survivor Series music.
Yeah.
You know,
and the graphics.
I don't know if somebody emailed me this, or if somebody posted this on the board, or where I read this, but someone had the idea that every year, Survivor Series should be the old-school pay-per-view. Like, I realize that old-school Raw is probably going to be done again and that sort of thing, but, you know, they're looking for ways to do special pay-per-views, and instead of doing stupid stipulations that don't draw that nobody gives a shit about, this could be a theme for the pay-per-view. It's going to be old-school Survivor Series. They'll bring back all the guys. They'll have Gene Okerlund and Howard Finkel, and all these dudes come back, and for one night only on pay-per-view, you get to relive all of this fun, and as many people have mentioned, bring back the old belts. And I think that would boost the Survivor Series buy rate every year without fail.
Speaking of old dudes.
And by the way, a scoop for everybody.
Mm.
They are considering later this year, or actually next year, I'm sorry, 2011, doing an old school Nitro.
No.
Yes. Seriously. What do you think of that idea?
I'm trying to think who they can get for it. A lot of them are in TNA now.
Just bring back a bunch of old... Well, obviously you wouldn't bring back...
Many of them
Aaron
are dead.
Bischoff, for Christ's sake, but bring back a bunch of...
Jericho?
Yeah, old school. Well,
Chavo?
Like the, bring back the WCW set, and you bring back Tony Schiavone.
Oh, God.
And Larry Zbysko. There's all sorts of stuff you could do.
What a horrible idea.
Oh, why not? Who cares? For one night on Raw, the old Nitro music... Have Goldberg come back and squish Hugh Morris.
You can have Goldberg come back. That would work.
A lot of ideas. They could do this right around the Atlanta WrestleMania.
That's not the worst idea I've ever heard.
Thank you.
So Howard Finkel was there. He was introduced, and then he was immediately, and I mean immediately, a giant upgrade over Justin Roberts.
Yeah.
We'll get to more of this later, but it's amazing how much their current product sucks. In ways... Some of it is not their fault, and some of it is just, you'd have to be an idiot to make this product worse, and yet that's what you're doing.
What is not their fault, just out of curiosity?
Shawn Michaels is retired.
Oh, well, that's true.
Some guys have gotten hurt.
Okay.
Yeah. But Howard Finkel was there. He brought out the Brooklyn Brawler and Harvey Whippleman. To my horror, I realized they were going to make Brooklyn Brawler wrestle. He wrestled Ezekiel Jackson. He managed to not die in this match.
Mm-hmm.
That's an achievement.
Yeah.
He lost. So Zeke won. Yes. We had the Nexus promo where they all stand in a line facing the camera and then turn their necks to talk to each other where it looks completely phony. This is one where it is their fault the product sucks. So what happened here? The Otunga said Otunga said somebody needed to take out Truth. Wade said he should do it. GM interrupted and said Otunga was booked for a special match later tonight. So, he booked Truth versus Wade. Wade said this was fine. He would prove he could win on his own. We got Cena versus Miz. Miz backed out last second and named Alex Riley as his replacement. Said this would only, you know... The GM did not interrupt, so the match was on. It was short. Cena won. Miz was about to attack him when Orton ran down to the ring. He beat up Miz. Then McGillicuddy and Harris ran down. Orton chased them off. Then he stared down John Cena. Cena stared back at him. The crowd was going nuts. They were tense. Their fists were ready to go. And then they had the worst brawl in Monday Night Raw history. This was ungodly terrible. Cena was throwing these half-speed, open-hand body shots that were coming up a foot short. This sucked. Finally, not a moment too soon, the officials ran down and separated them. And the GM booked Orton.
Including John Laurinaitis tripping on the ropes and falling on his ass.
I missed this. I was apparently still in shock from the action we had seen.
I love Tony Garea hitting the ring. That was awesome.
Tony Garea is still around, yes.
Yeah.
So the GM booked Orton and Cena for Piper's Pit later in the show.
Thank God. Saving Survivor Series right there.
There's a lot of positives right there. Howard Finkel was in the ring with the 2,000-year-old Nikolai Volkov and the Iron Sheik. Santino interrupted the Russian National Anthem, brought out Kozlov. Kozlov and Volkov did the worst rendition of the Russian Anthem ever, until finally Santino interrupted. He said he had another song he wanted to hear. They brought out Slick, who was lip-syncing Jive Soul Bro. As Slick was making his way down the ramp, Iron Sheik could wait no more and began to cut a promo on Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Slick finally got in the ring, they got the music off. Santino told Sheik to go ahead. Sheik took credit for creating Hulkamania.
Yeah.
He told the fans not to chant USA. He said, Iran number one, Russia number one, USA hop three. And then the Usos came out. So we had the Usos versus Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov in the number one contenders match.
Yeah, these were the top two contenders for the tag team championships in all of WWE.
These are teams 2 and 3 in the world.
Uh-huh.
This match sucked. Nobody gave a shit about anyone. They got the heat on Vladimir Kozlov, the Russian killing machine. Then Santino got a hot tag, and he ran wild, and he won with the Cobra.
Mm-hmm. The Cobra, everybody.
I'm sure at some point, Scotty Too Hotty probably won the tag team belts with the Worm.
Well, he didn't win the belts.
I don't remember. It was a decade ago.
No, I'm talking Santino did not win the belts here. He only won a number one contenders match over dorks.
That's true.
No offense to the Usos or not, but they are pushed as dorks.
They are dorks.
Yeah.
So then, to render the whole thing silly, Sheamus came out and killed everyone. Number two and three tag teams on Earth. He killed them by himself.
He's the number one tag team on Earth.
He should be.
The number 1.5.
I would rather watch Sheamus by himself versus Gabriel and Slater. So then he was going to kill Santino. John Morrison made the save again. At this point, I just typed, please move the story along, and fast forwarded. Apparently, I missed the part where they actually issued a challenge.
Yeah.
So, there you go. We had David Otunga. His special match that the GM had promised was against Kofi Kingston. Kofi cut another inset promo. It was also great. So they're having this match when who should want her out but George the Animal Steel.
How did you totally not make any mention whatsoever of Eve?
I fast-forwarded through the entrance, too. 3-hour show, dude. I gotta get through this.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yes, I missed Eve.
Well, your loss.
Life sucks. So we were talking earlier about how Gene Okerlund looks the same. George Steel has not aged since, like, 1970. Part of that is because he looked old in 1970, but he came out, he was George Steele, the crowd went apeshit. I couldn't believe they recognized this man. He ate a turnbuckle, he left, Otunga was perplexed, Kofi threw him into the exposed turnbuckle and pinned him.
You know, normally to punish you for not watching something, I would make you go down right now and watch it. But in this case...
The punishment is missing it?
The punishment is not seeing it.
She looked good then?
Vinny, you'd never have been the same. This was the best she's ever looked in her entire life.
Wow.
And you missed it. And it was too bad for you. That's all I'm going to say. It's too fucking bad for you.
I'm over it. So, backstage, Jerry Briscoe and Arn Anderson were congratulating Morrison. They're standing there talking, and then Sheamus sneak attacks Morrison and kicks him in the face. Now, usually when you sneak attack someone, you get them from behind. Sheamus just walked up to Morrison and kicked him, and Morrison didn't see this coming. What an idiot John Morrison turned out to be. So this is where, I guess, Morrison issued the challenge for Survivor Series. Sheamus accepted, so they're going to wrestle.
Did you watch any of this show?
It was a long day.
Jesus Christ. Gerald Briscoe and Arn Anderson were putting over Morrison. Sheamus killed Morrison. So I'm not sure how you expect Morrison to issue a challenge after he was killed.
I think it was before that.
Sheamus told the agents to tell Morrison when he woke up that they were going to be wrestling at Survivor Series.
All right. I was more mystified about how Morrison did not see Sheamus coming.
Hmm.
That's the part that got me.
Maybe he fast-forwarded his own segment.
That would be awesome. Sheamus can fast-forward himself. Then we got something awesome. Oksana was walking backstage with the U.S. title. Hacksaw Duggan interrupted her and said, "Ho!" She said, "What did you call me?" He said, "Never mind. Your mother is over there." Oksana did not for a second hesitate and ask, "Why is my mother from Lithuania backstage at Monday Night Raw?" She walked over and saw a large person in with long blonde hair. It was Dusty Rhodes in a wacky wig. He then gave Kelly Kelly a signal. Kelly dropped a net on Oksana. This is not the best part. Goldust appeared. He had set up this ruse with his father and Kelly Kelly. He took his belt back, the $1 million belt, vowed to return it to his rightful owner. At this point, Money Incorporated walked up. He gave the belt back to Ted Sr. Ted gave an evil laugh. IRS promised to find him a tax shelter for it. DiBiase said, "Never mind, I'm going to give it back to its rightful owner." He gave it to Ted Jr. Ted Jr. told Ted Sr. to keep it. He wanted a different belt, and he left. Cody walked up, said that was not dashing. Goldust asked for grooming tips. Cody said no and walked off. Goldust said, "Help a brother out." I laughed. And then Dusty Rhodes decided it was time to dance, and then this is where it got great. Because you see, Dusty Rhodes had them play his theme song. He started to dance. Kelly started to dance. IRS and Ted DiBiase started to dance. And in the background, still in the net, Oksana began to dance. That was great. Dusty Rhodes' theme music is so catchy, so irresistible, that even evil, devilish, gold-breaking women trapped in nets cannot help themselves but to boogie. Tatanka was there, Hacksaw Duggan was there, and then Ron Simmons said, "Damn."
Yeah.
But just the moment when Oksana, in the net, began to dance was when I decided, great segment.
I knew this was one of those segments that folks like you would think was awesome. I thought it was all right. It was just so wacky.
Yes.
It was trying too hard to be wacky to me.
It was on the fence until Oksana began to dance. Hmm. That's when I decided this is perfect. This is perfect television. Oh, Truth and Wade had a good TV match. Wade won clean with Wasteland. He's your number one contender. He should be beating Truth.
So I presume you fast-forwarded through Lord Al Hayes doing promotional consideration?
Apparently I did. Hmm. So we had Rico began to introduce Alberto De Rio. Tito Santana interrupted. He sucks at doing ring intros. They brought out... The car was being driven by Travo Classic. It was Alberto De Rio. He got in the ring and basically talked about millions and millions of fat Americans as they were here in Hershey, Pennsylvania, home of chocolate. So Sergeant Slaughter came out to defend fat people, also to defend Americans and to defend legends. So they had a match. It was pretty fun. Sergeant Slaughter applied the Cobra Clutch in 2010, and Hershey, Pennsylvania went crazy. This is an old-school crowd. They knew all the old shit. So Sarge actually went up top at one point, and Alberto won with his pop. He hit his running up in Zagiri and won with it. So I guess this means Sarge can't take the flying armbar. But they had a good match, and then Del Rio went to put the armbar on, but MVP saved. Why MVP? I don't know. Is it just because Rey is hurt?
By the way, everybody, as it regards Lord Al Hayes, which Vince fast-forwarded through here, along with half of the three-hour Raw, Lord Al Hayes is, in fact, dead. So for those of you wondering, it was not Lord Al Hayes that did that entire promotional consideration. It was him that began it from the old WWE primetime wrestling spots, but they actually had someone in WWE doing a Lord Al Hayes impersonation when he talked about Buffalo Gyms, I believe, and Snickers. So, I hate to spoil it for everybody, but Lord Al Hayes did not, in fact, return from the dead for this promotional consideration, which would have been impressive, quite frankly.
It would have been a good trick. We had a video from the WrestleMania tickets going on sale. 9 times out of 10 when they do this, it's either completely indifferent or you become embarrassed to be a wrestling fan like the people they show on TV.
I'm baffled you watch this. Even I fast-forwarded through this shit.
These people were excited for WrestleMania and in no way embarrassing. They were very enthusiastic. They couldn't believe how lucky they were WrestleMania was coming to their town, and they could not wait for the day when they could go to the George Dome and watch the show.
I think they got a shot of every person who actually bought a ticket on the on-sale
date. That may be true. So then we had Mean Gene interviewing Mae Young. The Bellas helped her creep out. She was dressed to wrestle, and my heart stopped. I was terrified. She is older than my grandfather. And let me tell you, he's old. So Laquel interrupted. They were being bitchy and making fun of her being old. So she said she wanted a match with them. She called them sluts and also called them bitches. She began to chase them around the aisleway. It was booked as a no DQ Falls Count Anywhere match, which meant all the girls on the show could interfere. So Laquel got beat up by four or five women, and then May put her foot on Layla's chest and was declared the winner. 2.5 hours into the 3-hour Raw, they brought out Jim Ross. That right there made me angry. They didn't bring him out from the get-go. They brought him out when the show was almost over, and then he left. So remember earlier when I said that Howard Finkel was immediately better than Justin Roberts? Jim Ross, halfway through his first sentence, raised this entire show many, many levels. He has a gravity to his voice, a sincerity. He's enthusiastic about the product. He wants to see all the wrestlers. He thinks they're all great. He makes them seem important. He makes them seem like stars. It was so great, I got angry at what I had to sit through every single week. So we had Daniel Bryan versus Jack Swagger. As usual, Daniel Bryan had the best match on the show. That's his gimmick now. Jim Ross was there going crazy for both guys, making them seem like super athletes and stars, frankly. Michael Cole was funny at first, being appalled that JR was there and calling him boring. They cut to a shot of the announce desk where JR was going crazy and Michael Cole was asleep on his wrist. That made me laugh. But then by the end of this, he was, like I say, calling JR boring. He was burying the match. He was burying the stars. He was burying the wrestlers, I should say. He was burying the announcing. Burying the entire product. And I'm sure he was just doing what he was told. But my God. To bury your show at all is a dumb idea, but to bury it when it gets good and say your usual bullshit is better, I was angry and depressed. So Daniel Bryan eventually won with the Mirko Krokop high kick, which I noted it exactly as you did. That's what it was. And then he got attacked by Ted DiBiase Jr., so now you know why Ted didn't care about the $1 million belt. He's going after the U.S. belt instead. They brought out all the old dudes one more time to give them all a big round of applause, and then it was time for Piper's Pit. Piper brought out Cena. Before Cena could talk, Piper started talking about the all the memories he had as a legendary wrestler, 30 years in the business, but he said the one thing he never did was he never wore the WWE title. Said that fact still ate at him. Said there were a lot of legends, like Ricky Steamboat, and I forget who else he said, but there were a lot of names that never got to wear that title. And if John Cena was going to hand the belt over to Wade Barrett, he would be spitting in their faces. So Cena said that was true and said he was going to make an announcement right here. He was going to call the match down the middle. And if Orton won, he was going to count three. And if Wade won, he was going to count three and Wade would deserve the title. So Wade came out. He congratulated Cena for making a decision. He reminded him that he would be fired. And then finally, after all these weeks, finally ordered him to put on a Nexus t-shirt. It seemed so simple. So Cena said, I will beat you up after the match on Sunday. Wade said, Nexus will protect me. Orton finally came out. He teased jumping Cena to get rid of him. And then at the last second, turned and attacked Wade instead. And Cena was watching this beating and was perfectly fine with it. Piper just kind of slipped through the ropes and disappeared. But then Randy set up for the RKO and Cena stepped in his way. So he got Orton got mad, RKO'd Cena. He tried to punt him, but Cena dodged and hit an FU. So Orton was down in the corner. Wade was happy. He said, raise my hand. So Cena FU'd him as well, and that ended the show. It was good. I'm out of steam.
Way to go, Vinny.
Thanks, dude.
Too much shit at the end there. Talking about your review, not the show.
I thought so.
No, the stuff at the end with the FU and the RKO, you couldn't even remember what happened.
That is true.
It's too much stuff. It should have ended when Wade Barrett took the shirt and told Cena that he had to put it on, and Cena would have put it on, and that would have been the perfect ending of this show. They just had to keep going. Piper was awesome. Piper sold buys. Piper is the first guy in at least months, maybe even longer, who did a promo that sold pay-per-view buys. That's how good Roddy Piper was on this show. He also looked like he lost a lot of weight. So anyway, we need more Roddy Pipers, and that's no surprise. We need more guys with talent.
That is true. Especially on this show.
I'm still gobsmacked that you did not watch Eve's entrance.
I don't know what to tell you, dude.
I feel the same way about that as you felt about Jim Ross coming on the show and then leaving.
I see. I had watched, by the time Ross started, I'd already watched, I guess only 2 hours of wrestling, but it was 2 hours back to back. I watched like 5 hours of wrestling in a row, basically. So, I was in ready to be done.
Let's play a quick drop right here.
Talking about the possibility of a plague in Eastern Europe. Is it real? Is it man-made? Could it come here? Also, giants and demons and some other issues with none other than Stephen Quayle next on Coast to Coast AM.
You know you are, Vinny. You're the George Norrie of this show.
What makes you say that?
Well, if anybody listened to Coast AM, they'd understand. You see, Art Bell was replaced by George Norrie. You know what I mean?
And George Norrie sucks, is that what you're saying?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but did you just hear George Norrie there?
In a moment, we will be talking about the possibility of a plague in Eastern Europe. Is it real? Is it man-made? Could it come here? Also, giants and demons and some other issues with none other than Stephen Quayle next.
That,
he's just not impressed with it.
Giants, demons, and some other issues.
Giants, demons, and some other issues.
Coming up here in just a moment.
He is bored with the entire thing, yes.
Yeah.
Well, in that sense, you got a point.
All righty. Let's talk about 24/7. I'm going to take over this segment here because you may have fast-forwarded through your own review.
How dare you.
This 24/7, we decided to watch Championship Wrestling from Florida. It's from April 18th, 1987. There was Gordon Solie on this show. Sometimes you watch an old WWE event and you realize, wow, half the guys on this show are dead. Well, I kind of had that on Championship Wrestling from Florida here. 1987, and with the exception of Ric Flair, a lot of guys not doing so well nowadays, and some of them in the earth. So we'll talk about that here on this program.
That's a
here.
Delicate way to put it.
And other issues. So, Solie opened up the show and talked about this big match they were going to have coming up with Barry and Kendall Windham in an Australian tag team main event. Yeah, yes. Australian tag team rules, everybody. That's a tag team match, by the way. So out came Ric Flair, and he cut the greatest promo of all time. Ric Flair is the best wrestler who's ever lived, I decided after watching this deal here. He talked about Mike Rotundo, how he was wrestling him for the title this coming Sunday night. Talked about the Horsemen, the Road Warriors. Talked about how they were going to have a victory party in Daytona for all the girls after we squash the opponents.
That was what he said. After we squash the opponents.
That's what he said. After we squash the opponents.
Just said that.
And then he went, woo! And off he went. This was awesome.
It was a classic Ric Flair promo.
Ric Flair is the best. Just is like the best. He was so fantastic on the show. Not only his promo, but he had a match later on the show with just a random guy. We'll talk about that later. And hell of a short TV match with this random guy. So Ric Flair was the best of all time, everybody. He just really was.
Duly noted. We had Barry and Kendall Windham in an Australian tag team event against Jack Towers and Randy Mulkey. This was some bad pro wrestling.
Kendall Windham. Imagine Sid Vicious if he weighed 150 pounds.
Yeah, actually.
That's Kendall Windham.
That's what he looks like.
Kendall, and the thing was, even Barry Windham didn't look good in this match. Like, nobody in this match looked any good at all. There were dudes that couldn't run the ropes. Kendall didn't seem to know what the hell he was doing half the time. The finish was a bulldog.
It technically was. Jack Towers became the first of about 400 men on the show who clearly had never run those ropes before in their life. And he had to be whipped from the ropes to the turnbuckle. And then Kendall tried to run at him and grab him and hit a bulldog. a spot we've seen many times from guys like Raven and Matt Hardy and CM Punk. This is not a highly athletic move.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe you're wrong.
But apparently it is. Because Kendall Windham looked so clunky and out of position for his own move. It was bizarre. So this sucked a cock.
This was a show, by the way, of... This was just a weird show because of there were people on the show that I have been on shows with. And in fact, as we will soon see, there was a man on the show that I've actually had a match with. And actually, the Tahitian Prince is coming up. But I actually once worked a match that the Tahitian Prince was on. He was much, much heavier at the time. He was downright athletic and lean on this particular show. But anyway, the match was Mike Rotundo and Ed Gantner. And this was for the Florida Championship held by Rotundo.
He was Rotundo on this show.
Rotundo. Anyway, point was the referee, Bill Alfonso, with a permed, mullety afro, I guess you could call it.
And a mustache.
Yeah. So they had a deal where Bill Alfonso took a bump. Gantner had a pin. There was no referee. The Tahitian Prince ran in. He tried to kick Rotundo. Rotundo moved. He hit Gantner. And then Rotundo tossed Prince out, made the cover. Fonzie counted the pin. So, yes, a ref bump and a fuck finish here in Championship Wrestling from Florida in 1987. Oliver Humperdinck went apeshit and went and cut a promo with Gordon Solie. And
the best thing about it was, I've never seen this before. Every wrestling show I've ever seen, going back to like the 50s, when guys went to cut a promo, they would have the interviewer there holding a microphone. At Championship Wrestling from Florida, they had Gordon Solie sitting in his little, I guess it was a desk, and next to him were two mic stands.
Yeah, like the ones you used to have.
Exactly like the ones I used to have. And the wrestlers would go there and they would cut promo into the mics and the stands. So Oliver Humperdinck is just going crazy. He's outraged. He says he's had enough of this trust. He's putting his trust in fools like Ed Gantner. He's clumsy and incompetent. He's going to take care of this himself. And as he's ranting and raving, Gordon Solie is just sitting there looking at him like, what a fucking goober this is. He could not believe this man was taking up his TV time.
Ed Gantner has passed away. He suffered numerous health problems as a result of steroids. And then he had some mental problems, and then he got back on the gas, and it was a downward spiral, and then he shot himself. So the first guy on this show who passed away as a result of a suicide, and he was not the last, I might add. So that's unfortunate for Ed Gantner. Kevin Sullivan came out and did a promo.
He looked enormous and also very, very lean.
Yeah.
And he cut a promo. He demanded a match with Dusty Rhodes. Said he'd been chasing Dusty for 2 years. He said Jim Crockett was in the building. He wanted to come out there. Jim Crockett did. Sullivan said Crockett signed all of Rhodes' contracts. He can make this match happen. Crockett said, if you're sure you want the match, I can give it to you tonight. So he got a match tonight in Lakeland. Sullivan then went crazy. He started talking about time and space coming to a stop. He said he hated Dusty. He hated Dusty's kids. And he hated Dusty's sister.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
I don't know if she was on the show at some point, but there you go.
We had Ron Simmons and Brady Boone, the latter of whom, dead, car accident, faced the Mod Squad, who were two big fat guys.
I describe them as two Bubba Ray Dudleys.
Yeah.
Two big, kind of fat, kind of muscular white guys with goatees.
Yeah.
One of them actually here on Florida TV in 1987 used a power bomb. It didn't look very good, but still. And so they beat up Brady Boone for a while. He got a hot tag to Ron Simmons, who was running wild with football tackles. And then he hit the ropes and he was tripped. We did not see the tripper. We were told it was Shaska Watley. But Ron Simmons was tripped and he hit the mat. And then the Mod Squad pinned him.
Sure.
It had been a good match up to that point.
Well, he tripped and he landed on his head.
Apparently. Perhaps in a parking lot.
Knock a man out.
That's what happened here. Had a little deal where they plugged the 30th anniversary of the Florida Youth Ranch. This is a charity that Eddie Graham had played a big part in earlier, and he was, of course, passed on. So in memory of Eddie, they were going to do a show, and all the proceeds of the show were going to go to the Florida Youth Ranch. So they had some representatives from the ranch there and also the sheriff's department who was organizing the thing. This is all very nice.
The Tahitian prince faced Louis Estella, I believe.
That's the best I could do in getting it. They don't have graphics on the show, and often we would not learn the man's name until Gordon said his name halfway through the match. So
Tahitian Prince was a hell of a worker, I might add. And it was a squash match, but he looked great.
It was actually...
Killed the man.
In 1 minute, he just destroyed this guy. He looked like a very dangerous, very scary man. He hit him with kind of a DDT off the middle ropes that Sully called a headbuster. So
which looked like a headbuster.
It looked like it busted the man's head.
Nearly killed the poor guy.
So yes, this is 1 minute of just unrepentant violence. And then when it was over, the Polynesian Savage Tahitian Prince simply got to his feet, calmly walked across the ring, gently shook Oliver Humperdinck's hand, and calmly stepped through the ropes like a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome.
Handshake was great.
Yes.
We had Nikita Koloff and Dusty Rhodes. Nikita Koloff actually looked like Adam Pearce here, I thought, with his belt and his shaved head and his goatee. And they did a promo, and Dusty was all wacky and talked about how, basically, if you hated his family, that meant you hated the entire state of Florida because they're all his family. And so you could kiss his, and then they went, beep, and you could not hear him say the word ass.
That was not allowed in 1987. And Gordon Sully was awesome because he took everything in stride.
Mm-hmm.
The funny stuff, the horrible stuff, none of it ever broke him. He just moved on. We had Scott Hall versus Tio Samoa. Where to start? Scott Hall was Scott Hall. He had a sweet mullet and an even sweeter porn stash and also cowboy boots. Meanwhile, Tio Samoa, there's no way this guy was taller than Hornswoggle.
I'll bet you think Tio Samoa was taller than I am. Scott Hall is 6'5".
I understand that. I understand. Yeah, he looked about 8'5". This is a tiny little man they found for him to wrestle. He won in 30 seconds with an over-the-shoulder backbreaker.
This being Scott Hall, everyone.
Yeah, Tio Samoa did not beat Scott Hall. We had the Southern Boys, Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong, cutting a promo. They said they were going to team with Kendall Windham, and they were also going to chew tobacco. That's almost a direct quote. So there you go. Then things got fantastic, as they were joined by the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant. Apparently, they were going to be doing six-man tags later, because he began talking about the number six repeatedly. He said he had six women, he had six Cadillacs, he had six eggs for breakfast, and he was going to go home and have six T-bones for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
He went on for a while. He said that he was from New York, but he was born in the South Bronx. Therefore, this qualified him as a Southern boy.
Sure.
How did I not love this man when I was... Because he was on wrestling when I started watching it this time.
I don't know
time.
What's wrong with you.
What was wrong with me when I was 12?
I'm wondering what's wrong with you today.
Well, there's that too.
It's a lifetime deal. Kevin Sullivan then faced a little man, and I was trying to figure out who this little man was, and Sullivan did a foot stomp, and Gordon Soley said, Sterling Hurt. And I thought, what an odd name, Sterling Hurt?
Sterling, I thought he said Sterling Kurt, which would be a like great name for a wrestler.
Big Dick Hurts? Sterling Hurts? So then, somewhere in here, it was mentioned that his name was Jason Sterling. And I was like, holy fucking Christ. In probably the sixth match of my career, I faced a young man named Jumpin' Jason Sterling. I thought he was a young man.
I'm going to say it was 14 years after this.
Apparently not. Jumpin' Jason Sterling. He was the son of the missing link, believe it or not. And he was a tiny man. I cannot believe... This man was like 3 inches shorter than Kevin Sullivan. I don't remember him being this short when I wrestled him.
He was barefoot here.
But Sullivan... Well, he was barefoot when he worked me.
Oh, all right.
Sullivan was like... Sullivan's like 5'5". So this guy had to be like Rey Mysterio size. Certainly seemed bigger than that when I wrestled him, but I'll always remember something about old workers where they always have goofy spots they want you to try. And Jumpin' Jason Sterling had this idea where he was going to throw me into the ropes and he was going to lean forward like he was going to backdrop me, but he wanted me to jump onto his back stand there, and then do a dance.
What?
This is what he told me.
How could I have never heard this before?
He said, I want you to hit the ropes. I'll put my head down for a backdrop. You jump on my back and do a dance. That's our spot. I was like, what the fuck? And so, of course, I tried it, and I jumped on his back, and I slipped off, and we had a terrible match. He'd probably been more alert in the past, and he had another spot. You know, I always mention I never had a concussion during my career, and as the months go on, I start remembering all these things that I probably did suffer a concussion, which is kind of scary, but this fucking guy wanted me to lay on the mat, and he was going to do a flip leg drop into the ring. You know, where you stand on the apron, you grab the ropes, and you do a flip, and you do a leg drop.
Okay.
He wanted me on my stomach, so he'd do this across the back of my head. And he promised he wouldn't fuck it up. So, of course, he flipped over the ropes, and he sat on my fucking head. I saw stars. I probably was knocked batty. And I just remember when it was over, I was like, I hope I never have to wrestle Jumpin' Jason Sterling again. And I'd completely forgotten that match. I'd forgotten everything about that until I watched this back. And holy fuck, that was Jumpin' Jason Sterling here on Championship Wrestling from Florida in 1987.
Well,
I couldn't even believe that. He was wrestling on this television show when I was eight. Seven! I was seven! Amazing.
Dude, this show was 1987.
Oh, that's right. I was 12.
You were 12.
Still. Ridiculous.
You should have done then what Kevin Sullivan did with him here, which is just beat the holy fuck out of him.
Kevin Sullivan found a man smaller than him. And when you're a short man, so I've heard, sometimes you can have a complex about that. And he took it out on Jumpin' Jason Sterling. Boy, did he ever.
I'm actually stunned that he lasted another decade in this business after this beating.
Yeah.
So Sullivan pinned him.
He may have retired and then came back for the match with me.
Perhaps. Sullivan pinned him with a foot stomp.
At which point I almost retired.
We had Arn Anderson and Lex Luger versus Denny Brown and Ed Roberts. Fans had the temerity to chant steroids at Lex Luger. Come on now.
In 1987.
They were aware. Luger was not fooling them. Ed Roberts was the 400th man in the show who could not run the ropes. You should have seen the point where he tried to run the ropes and Lex would power slam him. It's a good thing Lex was allegedly on steroids because a unassisted man would not have been able to hit this power slam.
They found jobbers that were worse than Lex Luger, and this was in 1987.
Yes.
How is that even possible?
I don't know.
This was horrible.
Anderson finally pinned him with a Gourd Buster. And then, so the match is over. Gordon looks at them and says, okay, we're going to see if Anderson and Luger have anything to say. Apparently they don't. And went to commercial.
Yeah. Ric Flair faced Mitch Snow. Mitch Snow, by the way, dead. Killed himself. 1991. Flair had a Ric Flair match with a preliminary guy. That's exactly what this was.
Mitch Snow got offense on Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah. They wrestled. Flair got out-wrestled. Then he got the heat. Then Mitch Snow got a comeback, and then Flair hit the delayed vertical suplex and the figure four and pinned him. Wish I was Mitch Snow in this match.
I suspect this is Mitch Snow's best match ever.
Yeah. This was a fun little TV main event right here.
So then we had the show closing promo. Lex Luger, Arn Anderson, J.J. Dillon, and Ric Flair joined Gordon Solie at the desk. If you ever watched the WCW Saturday Night Show from this era, you know how this went. The horsemen all took turns. They would say one or two funny sentences and cackle at themselves, and then Ric Flair would hold court. That's just how it went. So they started with Lex. Lex said two or three things. He promised to beat Nikita or whatever. Then he passed the mic to Arn Anderson. And then Arn Anderson lost his mind. He started screaming about waking up every day and fighting Dusty Rhodes and Koloff and Ronnie Garvin and the Rock and Roll Express. Talked about sacrifice, all he had done to be an Anderson and then to be a horseman. He was going on and on. He wouldn't shut up. He was screaming. He was passionate. He was a madman. He finally stopped. And then Ric Flair just had time to go, woo! And then the show ended. I never thought I would see the day when Arn Anderson stole Ric Flair's thunder in a promo, but here it was.
He did a hell of a promo.
It was great. It was just bizarre.
Hell of a promo. All right, let's play a quick song, and then we've got some shout-outs here that we've got to read, including a very special one. So let me... only problem with this new setup is I've moved the mixer way away from myself, which...
I need to get you a long stick.
It's not going to work. All right, here we go. Short and sweet. Cotrere produced that beautiful song right there. All right, we got shout outs here. So I'm going to get into it. Oh, look at this. This is actually quite amazing. I did not plan this, everybody. I know that sometimes this show is just so perfect that it seems this stuff must be planned, but Corey here in a shout-out says, I have not cashed in my shout-out, so in lieu, could you please play the drop from Art Bell's show about giants and demons? Well, there you go, buddy. Played it early on the show. Giants, demons, and some other issues. So thank you very much, Corey, for signing up, and that is a great drop. All right, this person here says, here's a feel-good story that will definitely get me a two-page write-up when it comes time to do my tribute issue. This is, by the way, I'll tell you who this is from when we're done. The neighborhood stray cat that I always fed and allowed to live in my hallway for the winter got hit by a car today and died.
Aww.
She gave birth to a litter of kittens about 2 weeks ago in my neighbor's garage. Unfortunately, the kittens are 2 weeks old and still need the mama cat for the milk. I brought the kittens to the pound since there's no way they can survive on their own. Plus, my neighbor is allergic to cats and allowed them to live in his garage. Unfortunately, I can't adopt them. I have dogs. Savage moon dogs. The pound would only give the kittens one day, and then they were going to put them down if they weren't adopted. I took them in front of the pound and offered free kittens. One person took three kittens, and two others adopted one kitten each. That's right, I adopted out five kittens that were motherless and had no options. If that doesn't give me a shout-out, nominated for the Observer Hall of Fame, a two-page tribute issue, and my own Hanukkah special, then nothing will. Next time you talk to Bruno, ask him what the hell did he ever do to help out kittens. That's why I am still better than Bruno. Who's that from, Vinny?
That Missy?
That is from Missy Hyatt.
Wow.
Missy actually, everybody, does a lot of really cool stuff in terms of animals. So she really did deserve a shout-out for that, especially since I've got my own little buggers here now. And when I think of these poor little ones getting hit by a car, it crushes my soul. So I'm very happy that Missy was able to get homes for all those little buggers. So, Missy, you deserve that shout-out.
Way to go.
That's right. And finally here, Steve. Dear Brian, thought I would save my shout-out for something special, so here it is. I'd like to ask all subscribers with iPhones or iPod Touches to go to the App Store and download my game, Spectrum Shock. It's my company's first game. I'm hoping it becomes a success. Much love to you guys, especially Vinny, who carries the show to greatness. Are you fucking kidding me, Steve?
Not today.
Jesus Christ. Signed up after a month of freeloading and love it. The sheer amount of content you get for your money is well worth it, and it makes my commute to and from work much more pleasant. So sign up, freeloaders. That is Steve from Bolton, England. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks,
of course,
Steve.
If you sign up out there listening right now, you also will get a special shout-out here on the show. All you have to do is sign up and then send the shout-out to brian@wrestlingobserver.com with shout-out in the subject line. We will read it here on the air. If you've got a band, if you help get kittens homes, whatever the case might be, we'll read your shout-out here on the program. But you have to sign up. wrestlingobserver.com. $10.99 a month. If you love this show and you only hear it once every 2 weeks, I don't know what the hell is wrong with you. $10.99 a month, you get every Brian and Vinny show that we do, which is 2 a week every single week, and we've done it 2 a week every single week for 5 years now, and every single one of those shows is available in the archive. So just to make that clear, if you are a Brian and Vinny show fan and you sign up right now and go to our archives... I actually don't know how many there are, because our archives used to be better than they are now, quite frankly.
Literally millions.
But they're probably... I'll do the math right now. God damn it. 104 shows a year times 5 years. Hey, Vince, shut. And you're off. 104 shows times 5 years. 520 shows are available in the archives with Vinny and I. So anyway, sign up today. That is it for this show. We're going to be back on Thursday with a brand new program. We'll be joined by Granny. And, of course, tomorrow, joined by Todd Martin in the morning, talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And then later on in the afternoon, we're going to be doing a Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave Meltzer, probably taking your phone calls, if I can figure out how to get all the way over there to the mixer. So, anyway, that is it from here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.